This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Welcome to episode number 314 of What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
And my name is John.
Outstanding, John. So.
No, I'm sitting.
Okay, fair enough. So, no, that's right. You're recording a podcast, not sewing. Anyhow, I'm not going to finish Halo. That's what I decided last week.
Excellent. Just like I decided we're not, well, we decided we're not going to finish The Staircase for the same, you know, okay, just doesn't need to be finished.
Yeah, right. I don't even feel bad about it. Ms. Marvel. Let's jump into Ms. Marvel. We forgot to talk about it last week. We watched the debut episode. I liked the first episode. What did you think of the first episode?
I really liked it. It was an odd situation, kind of like Moon Knight, where you've got this character who has full, well, in this case, she has full ties to the MCU, whereas Moon Knight was like, yeah, I exist in that world, but we're not really going to talk about it. You know, in this one, it's all about it. But I really liked the film style more than anything. Like, it reminded me of Into the Spider-Verse.
So I enjoyed the first episode pretty thoroughly.
Yep.
I enjoyed the film style, like you said, like Into the Spider-Verse. I enjoyed the story. I was very pleasantly surprised how much I liked the first episode.
You're using that phrase an awful lot.
Because I did like the first episode.
Yes.
And then the second episode was pretty much exactly what I expected the show to be, and pretty much thought this is why I wouldn't like it. So.
And which aspect of that did you not like?
There wasn't one specific thing. It was the overall, like, teenage drama campy, not campy-ish even, but just, yeah, like, I guess the, how do I say this? Like, the first one didn't feel like, remember my fear when we talked about it? Like, it was basically like, this is a 13-year-old with superpowers. Her friends are going to be 13-year-olds. They're going to act like 13-year-olds. I don't care about watching a show about 13-year-olds. You know, okay. a TV PG show about 13-year-olds or TVG. You know what I mean?
I mean, technically it's 16-year-olds.
But then we got the first episode and she's 16. She's trying to get her license. Like, oh, okay. Might be a little bit more adult. And the first episode was, but then this episode went right back to, I'm not getting attention. Like that other girl, the popular girl is getting attention. And all she did was get saved. I'm the one that saved her. Oh, I find this boy really, really cute. Oh, now I find this boy really, really cute. Like, that's not what I wanted. And that's what we got, in my opinion, in this episode.
Gotcha.
What was your thoughts on it?
I predicted a lot of it, you know, where, so like you said, the first episode really enjoyed, I enjoyed both of them, honestly. The first episode introduced us and it had a heavy lift because, again, you've got somebody who has never been introduced.
Right.
So you've got to care about this person. You've got to actually like come to see who they are and why you want to watch them in action. I loved the art style. I love the fact that, you know, as they're riding their bikes down the street through the alleyway and she's talking about different, you know, different spins she could take on Captain Marvel for the cosplay, and it's animating above them on the wall, you know, the zombie one or the Doctor Strange.
Yep.
Yeah. I liked when, when she's talking to the guidance counselor, and she's like, did you just quote Mulan? And he's like, yes, I did. And then as they keep talking, the two of them like do the split face thing, like in the Mulan movie poster. Love that. Yep. You know, I, a lot of good nods. The soundtrack is fucking great. Really, really enjoyed that. The second episode, like I said, I predicted quite a bit of it. You know, as soon as we got introduced to the hot guy, I was like, okay, there's too much going on here with him. The fact that he has the car and he's talking to her, nothing against her, but the fact that he's talking to her when he could pretty much have his pick of anybody, I was like, he's either going to turn out to be a villain or he's going to turn out to be like a plant or something. And yep. Yeah, you know, not hard to predict there. I do feel like there's less superhero stuff going on and more more of the angsty drama.
And teenage drama angst. Which was all a turnoff to me to the CW shows.
Right. The thing that keeps pulling me back is the fact that beyond the teen angst, they are really, really getting into her heritage. Like, we're really getting to, like, where that street festival that they were talking about. I don't even know what that word was, but they were like, oh, are you coming to this? And I was like, I don't know what that is. And then seeing them walking around, seeing the foods, I was like, I want to go to this. I kind of want to go to one of these and try that food, because I've had a lot of that, you know, falafel and gyros and stuff like that. Really grown to love Middle Eastern and Greek food recently. So seeing that, I was like, oh, I would love to check this out. And I love the little clicks that they had there. I busted a gut at the Illuminantes.
Yep. I thought that was funny because they kept saying it. I'm like, what are they saying? Because they're saying that word wrong. And then when you saw it, I was like, oh.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I liked that part of it. I thought that was cool.
The teenage stuff, you're right. It is a little heavy-handed, but we knew that that's what it was going to be going into it because that's what the comics are, you know? This is – if back in the 90s when you get a fully Jubilee episode of the X-Men cartoon. You know, you knew that it was going to be like, okay, this is going to be a little bit rougher than seeing Wolverine and Cyclops go at it over Jean. So I don't know. For me, it's not as big of a deal, but I do recognize it. You're right. You know, there is an awful lot of teenage stuff there, but I'm offsetting it with the other stuff, you know, offsetting it with the cultural stuff and the fact that she sucks at her powers. You know, she didn't just naturally figure out how to do it. We got the nice training montage, and even then she kind of is okay. When she goes to rescue that kid, you know, she's like creeping along the side of the building because she doesn't want to fall. She can't trust herself to catch herself. And then yeah. She even drops him, you know, when she gets distracted. So I'm liking that aspect of it. So, yeah, for me, there's still a lot to like about it, and I will keep watching it.
I mean, I'm not going to give up on it. I just it started out like, oh, OK, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. And mm-hmm. then episode two was like, oh, this is exactly what I thought it was going to be. And again, the teenage angsty stuff is what turned me off to the majority of the CW shows, you know, outside the terrible storytelling we got here the last few seasons, a lot of these shows.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I'm gonna hold out because I'm sure somehow, some way, it's gonna tie into some sort of Marvel property in the future that I want to know the little insidey stuff or whatever.
Well, they've already announced that Captain Marvel 2 is not going to be Captain Marvel 2. It's going to be called The Marvels, and it's going to be Ms. Marvel, Captain Marvel, and Photon. You know, Monica Rambeau's character.
Yep.
So, you know, this will definitely have a tie into that for sure.
No, absolutely.
Probably the Young Avengers, if we ever get that. Yeah.
Excuse me. Let's see here. Oh, I tried watching the new Jeff Bridges show, Old Man.
I did not try it. I was going to wait for you because I remember you told me with the preview that it looked like it should be a movie, not a TV show. And I wasn't really interested in it anyway, so I figured I'd wait for you.
It was a level of slow that I was just not digging.
No.
Nope. I didn't even finish the first episode.
Really?
Yeah. I struggled very hard. It was not exciting to me. It was very slow. I said that, I realized. I just, even in the story, like, I was starting to wonder, like, is he, because he keeps talking to, like, his daughter on the phone, but I started questioning if she was even there.
Okay.
Just sort of his hallucinations he's having about his dead wife. Yeah, there's just a lot of aspects of it that just kind of, yeah. And then something bad happens, and I'm like, oh, he must be going to go to his daughter's house or whatever, and he doesn't. Like, it made me think that maybe she doesn't exist or something. I don't know. It's just, right. It didn't hook me. It didn't reel me in. It didn't make me go, ooh, I'm going to keep watching this, you know? So I didn't. And maybe I'll go back and check out an episode or, you know, maybe come at it with a different mind.
Okay.
But, just didn't do anything for me.
Okay. Yeah. Honestly, like, when I sent you the trailer, it seemed like it was something more your style than mine.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're not telling me anything that that surprises me. And I'm definitely not going to check it out. If you do go back, I'll be interested to hear what you have to say, though.
Yeah. I did watch the new episode, the first two episodes, actually, because they had two episodes on AMC Plus, even though the second episode didn't technically air until 2 days ago, of the new Dark Winds.
Yes.
It's a psychological thriller. It's based on a Lee Porn and Chi book series, apparently, about two police officers on the Navajo Reservation. It takes place in the 1970s. I got to say, I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the first episode. I enjoyed both episodes. But it's surprising there's only six episodes, because they opened up such a big story that they're now going to have to close in four episodes. Or unless they have a giant cliffhanger, that is. But yeah, I mean, I'm not, did you watch any of it at all?
Not yet. No.
Okay. Are you going to?
I don't know. It's not something that, like, jumped out at me as I was really interested in it.
All right. Well, it's only going to be six episodes. Like I said, each episode's about an hour. I don't really want to give it away in case you do want to check it out. I'll just say that
a lot of good reviews, a lot of rave. So,
I'll just say I really thoroughly enjoyed it. If you liked Longmire, I mean, maybe that's.
I never watched it.
Oh, you didn't? Okay. That's right. You did not watch Longmire. That was a good show. I mean, it's got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
The thing that turned me off to it was the Western aspect of it.
A big draw.
Yeah. And that's one of the places where you and I diverge. Like, for me, Western is just Western and war stuff. They just don't do it for me. Whereas I know you're into both. So
I am. Yeah. 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 It's a psychological thriller. There's a bank heist. There's a murder, a double murder. There's traditional Navajo traditions. You know, they're, I don't want to say magic, just their, whew, boy, that is not a great way to describe their traditions and their beliefs as magic. Wow. Customs, their customs and beliefs and things of that nature. I mean, it dives heavy, kind of heavy, but not so heavy that you get lost, but enough that, like, if you've seen it pretty much any place else, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, this is a custom, or this is like a smoke ritual or peyote ritual, or like, you know, the things of that nature, you know what I mean? Vision quest. They didn't go on a vision quest, but all those stereotypical things you've seen in any other movies involving Native American and their belief, spiritual beliefs and everything, you know, that there's aspects of that. but mostly it is just it's you know, it's kind of a murder mystery, whodunit. You know, the FBI gets involved. We don't really have so far any interactions with locals, quote unquote, or like local police. You know, it's just the FBI and this Navajo police chief and his new deputy. So, like, okay. I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those I haven't sold it off because it's getting so many rave reviews. But honestly, just like the setting is not my. It's not something that's a go-to for me. For okay. the same reason that I didn't watch Longmire or what was that one? Yellowstone and then 18 something.
Oh, 1882. Yeah.
Sure.
That was great.
Yeah. But again, the same reason, or, you know, I've never watched Dunkirk or Saving Private Ryan. They're just, those are genres that just don't really do it for me. And it's not that I'm against them. I don't hate anything in particular. But they just, they don't really spark anything in me. Huh. It'd be so like sitting down and watching an episode of The Wiggles, you know?
Yep. It's interesting because this is based on a book series.
Uh-huh.
And he's been portrayed in other movies, which I didn't realize. A movie in 1991 called The Dark Wind, which he was portrayed by Fred Ward, who is definitely not Native American.
No. But, no, he is not.
He was Remo Williams. That's the thing I think about him the most in. But apparently, three of the author's books were adapted for a television series on PBS, part of their mystery series. And Wes Studi played the main character there, which is cool. I like him a lot. He's been in some great stuff. And Robert Redford served as the executive producer of that of those, and he's also the executive producer of this TV show.
Interesting.
Anywho, I'm a big fan of it. If you like westerns at all, or mysteries, or psychological stuff, I don't know. I just say watch it. I think everyone should give it a chance. At least the first episode.
Okay. I mean, I may.
Yeah. Oh, so The Boys.
Yeah.
That is veering so hard away from the comic books that if you were like a diehard comic fanatic of this, you would have loved the first season of this show. Mm-hmm. And the second season, you've been like, that's supposed to be a guy, but okay, I'm still digging it. But this season, you'd be like, what the fuck? Where'd they get this from? It's like the Game of Thrones fans that got more and more pissed off as the show went on.
Walking Dead fans.
Walking Dead fans. Same exact scenario. Same exact scenario right here. So.
And I wonder if part of that is because with these things, comic books especially, eventually you have to branch off because you told a story in those comic books and then you look at it and either you're saying, I don't know if this plays the same today or if you're like, you know what? I always kind of wanted to do it this way instead. Or after I wrote it, I was like, ooh, what if we had done this? Or it could just be that they want to entice new people because, you know, the diehard comic fans might be like, I know exactly what's going to happen. I know exactly what's going to happen. And then they become the toxic fanboys who are spewing it out over, you know, pretty much everything right now. Ms. Marvel, Kenobi. And, you know, they'd be like, fucking this is wrong from the comics. You didn't follow it exactly. So this way they can avoid that whole clusterfuck. I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely didn't. You know, like I've read all the comics. I'm not a diehard, but I have read the entire run. And it is something that I do enjoy is the comics. I thought they told a great story. There's aspects of season two that, what's her name there? Stormfront definitely, I think, works better as a woman than a man.
Yeah.
In the TV series. So yeah, I think it definitely worked better as a man. I mean, the interactions with Homelander and just everything else behind it. I think because it was a woman saying the things that they were being said, it almost seems worse. You know what I mean? I don't know how, but anyhow, so I enjoyed that change thoroughly. I'm not disliking the third season. I'm just commenting that definitely drifting from the comics pretty significantly.
So just to take a step back, I think what you were talking about with Stormfront saying, you know, it hit differently because it was a woman espousing Nazi virtues and white supremacy. Yes. I think it's the same way that a lot of people were flabbergasted that so many women voted for Trump. Yes. You know, they were like, how can you? And these women were like, no, I love him, blah, blah, blah. So I feel like it's the same kind of thing. So that's what you're feeling is you're hitting that, you know, a guy running around saying white power and supremacy and, you know, Nazis. That's almost expected. You know, it's just like, yes, if I heard somebody was espousing Nazi virtues, I'm thinking man. So to see a woman, it's like, whoa, wait a minute.
Well, yeah, because historically it's always been.
Yeah. Yeah, the Third Reich was not really populated by a lot of women, but
no,
a lot of military
Ku Klux
was
Klan, anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, so, as far as this episode, it felt a little slower to me. It was definitely digging into a lot more characters and motivations. The one thing that bothered me was I saw a headline and it said, are you ready for the musical episode of The Boys? And I was like, oh, fucking right. I love a good gimmick like that. And it was not. We got like one little musical number that took place inside Kimiko's head. And that was it. So that was a little disappointing to me. I was hoping it would be a whole, like that episode of Scrubs where the woman heard music in her head. So like the whole thing was different musical numbers. I was hoping for that.
Yes, I actually thought the same thing. We were going to get a musical episode kind of completely, which would have been bonkers, probably cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it was just that kind of that one scene.
So
because considering the people behind the show, them doing a musical episode doesn't seem like, you know, out of sorts.
No. We got The Legend this time. And he's like, that's not my name. That's the level that I'm at. And this was essentially supposed to be the boys' version of like Stanley, you know?
Yeah.
And it was Paul Reiser, which was funny as shit after just seeing him in Stranger Things in a very different role. But yeah, like for as shocking as this series has been so far, this season especially, this felt kind of like a tame episode. Like,
well,
nobody really died brutally. And I'm not saying that they have to. I'm just saying that nobody really died brutally.
Well, I mean,
Maeve is probably dead, but that's an off-screen kind of thing.
No, she got, well, that's true. She got hauled away and put in, sent to Florida to rehab.
Allegedly.
Is what they were saying, yes.
That's the cover story. But the last time we saw her was Black Noir grabbing her from behind.
Yes.
You know, and A-Train's buddy there got knocked out by Blue Falcon. You know, he'll never walk again. But, you know, a lot of this was more character development. You know, it was the whole, you know, oh, we're going to get Blue Falcon to apologize. Or
Blue Hawks,
thank you.
Yeah.
Or seeing Homelander take over as CEO and having all those people kowtowing to him, except for that one woman who said, hey, how do you want to handle this? And he's like, do you think I'm fucking stupid?
Take a hike.
We almost got Ashley to crack, you know, when Starlight went and talked to her. She almost cracked, and then she was like, nope, never mind. dude, so Frenchie takes Kimiko to the hospital. MM tells Butcher to go fuck himself. So Frenchie takes her to the hospital. As he's looking at her body, like while she's laying there recovering, stabilizing in the hospital bed, Nina and her dude show up in that room and take him outside and walk him down the hall and say, here, go kill this dude and his daughter or you're fucked. And then they walk away. And his solution is, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to hide out in the exact same hospital, in the exact same room where they found me the first time, next to the woman that I love, that they know that that's who I'm here for.
Yeah, that was not planned well.
No, that was planned horribly. And then we had like the Deep takes over as the head of crime analytics and basically fires everybody except for two people. it's the whole thing's kind of imploding on itself, but very slowly in this episode. Like, this was a very slow implosion episode. We got to see more of Soldier Boy, but barely. It was more like, you know, he kind of appeared there and blew up Manhattan, and then he went out after Crimson Countess, who, that was a great nod, I thought. Seth Rogen sitting there jerking off to her at $20 a minute.
Yeah.
Julia's like, why is he in here? I'm like, because him and his buddy are the ones that brought this to the screen. Like, they were fans of the comics and said, let's get this show made. Oh, that makes more sense now. Like, yeah. Yeah. Mm. And do you realize that Crimson Countess is, she was Laurie in The Walking Dead?
Yes.
I had to look it up. I'm like, I know this person. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, I mean, we're clearly heading towards a showdown.
Yes.
Between Soldier Boy and Homelander. And so, go ahead.
Well, in the comic books, this is what's interesting, because in the comic books, Soldier Boy is a gay superhero or bisexual. And in the next episode is called Herogasm.
Yes.
And in the comics, Herogasm is like a 5 or 6 episode, like miniseries, if you will. And that is where Soldier Boy is introduced in the comics. But he's introduced as the hero that comes along to have sex with Homelander every year in hopes of being admitted into the Seven.
Oh.
Whereas in this, superhero boy, jeez and crow, Soldier Boy is like the Homelander before Homelander.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's so again, it's very interesting how different the TV series is from the comics in that aspect, because he's kind of a minor character in the comics that appears in this Herogasm episode, which is actually how I assumed he was going to be introduced in the series when they announced it all. I'm not unhappy with his introduction, but again, you know, the hardcore fanboys out crying.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. We're building towards this. I feel like this show can't exist without Homelander. But the thing is, this season, they're making him so unlikable. They're building him up. Again, I'm going to go back to The Walking Dead. You know, when we had the governor and when we had Negan, you know, you build them up as the most evil person in the world, and they just keep getting more evil to the point where you're like, they have to go away because otherwise the show is unenjoyable.
Yeah.
Like, it's gotten to the point now where, yes, Homelander is a threat, but as a viewer, it almost makes it unwatchable because he's invincible, he's unstoppable, and he doesn't give a fuck, and he hates everybody. So, you know, at that point, what do I care? Like, people are going to keep bouncing off him like fleas. So something has to happen to either knock him down or level the playing field, or I don't know. But, you know, I'm hoping that whatever they've got in mind for this showdown kind of brings things back so that there's some kind of balance.
Well, previously he was held under wraps by like a couple of different heads of Vought.
Mm-hmm.
And now currently it's not something that they're able to do. Because he has no governor, if you will, which is exactly what, you know, I can't think of his name now, but was said to him when the guy was framed and kicked out of power and Homelander was put into power.
Edgar. Stan Edgar.
Yeah. Was that, you know, he's going to be interested to see what happens when he has no one that can reel him in.
Yeah.
And now that no one is and no one's standing up to him and no one's talking back to him, and the one person that minorly does is immediately fired. No one's going to stand up to him except not even like I would imagine, like even the other, like not the only other hero that's standing up to him is Starlight. And
I mean, Maeve tried to, but
Maeve. Well, what's up with Maeve bringing Homelander the V-24 and then going brown chicken, Butcher. Brown cow with her? Butcher, I mean.
Yeah.
That surprised me.
That kind of surprised me, too.
I thought she was lesbian.
She,
and I get it. They were drunk.
Yeah.
She's bisexual, I guess, but.
But they alluded to the fact that they've been there before. Like, they've had sex before. So.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it was. I really enjoy the show. And again, it's something I look forward to every week. But it's starting to get to that point where the villain is too much. And something needs to happen to bring them back into check. Like, the best villains are the ones that have a vulnerability or two. You know, Lex Luthor was a phenomenal villain because he was human. You know, he's going up against Superman and he was fucking human and he had to find creative ways to get around him. He'd go to jail, he'd get out, you know. The Joker was a great villain because as psychotic as he was, one bullet would have put him down. Yeah. You know? So a good villain has to be like equal parts of psychotic and killable. If they're not killable, there's no point. Like,
right.
And that's the thing. Like, even with Superman, they always introduced this is his weakness. This is his vulnerability. Homelander doesn't have that. We've never been introduced to a certain rock or something that would make him weak.
He has no kryptonite.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as a matter of fact, he, along with the other Supes, it almost seems like the angrier they get, the more powerful they become.
Yes. I did enjoy but also cringe at the scenes where they were testing Soldier Boy's invulnerability, like when they put the assault rifle in his mouth and pulled the trigger. Because remember, that was a whole thing in the beginning of the first season with Translucent. Like, his skin was invulnerable, but they shoved a bomb up his ass, detonated it, and he exploded from the inside out.
Yep. Yeah.
So the Russians were trying to figure that out. We also don't know the specifics, but it definitely sounds like Soldier Boy's team basically sold him to the Russians.
Countess basically was like,
we all hated you.
Yeah, like, oh, I can't believe you escaped. I never actually loved you. He's like, I loved you.
He's like, how much did they pay you?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. We hated you that much.
Yep. Yeah, we all hated you.
Which is just like, ouch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little harsh. A little harshy dig right there.
So I will say this next episode that's coming up, Herogasm, I know you read the comics. This whole season, every week or so, there have been new things popping up about, here's so-and-so's take on Herogasm. Here's so-and-so talking about what it was like behind the scenes doing the Herogasm episode. So apparently this one, you know, they said that it has something to do with a orgy or something.
It's a big superhero orgy, yeah.
Yeah, so this is going to be an interesting episode. I'm curious as to if that's going to be the complete focus of it. Or if it's going to be more nuanced.
Well, I almost feel like it's going to just be, they've tamed down a lot of the violent sex, I guess. Consented violent sex.
Non-consensual, yeah.
Non-consensual violent sex, if you will, from the comics to the show. It'll be interesting to see what happens here. Like, I don't watch a show in front of my kids. Definitely not watching this one in front of the kids.
Yeah, usually I'm the first one when we talk about this stuff. I'm like, I'll watch it in front of your kids. Why? We were raised on this kind of stuff. This is one of those shows that I don't think that they would gain anything out of it, you know. Yeah. There's not really the whole termite jumping into the urethra thing. You're going to be answering more questions and confusing them and probably scaring them, because you know, young kids seeing that somebody's climbing up inside their ding dong, whoo, I'd be scared to go to the bathroom again.
It's like a fear.
Yeah legitimately. So yeah. This one, I will definitely agree with you. This is not the one to be watching with your kids.
Nope, not at all. The Orville?
The Orville.
Season 3, episode 3.
What was it called? It was like...
The Mortality Paradox.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do broad strokes real quick about my impressions, and then I want to hear what your thoughts are. But this is how mine went. I started watching it, and about the time they got to the planet, I went, "Ooh, are we going to meet the Orville version of Q? Is that where we're going with this?" And then I was watching the episode, and I was into it, and I was into it, and I was into it. And then the last, like, 10 minutes happened, and I went, "Oh, this sucks." I did not like the payoff at the end.
You went dead silent?
What? Hello? Did you just literally disconnect?
No, I'm still here. I haven't moved.
Oh, I heard you say something about dead silent, and then you went mute.
No, I heard you say, like, then I watched the last 10 minutes, and I literally went, and then there was just dead silence. So I said, you went dead silent?
No, I watched the last 10 minutes, and I went, oh, this sucks. Like, I didn't like the payoff.
Yeah.
So what were your thoughts on this one?
I at first I thought it was a very, like, Twilight Zone-esque episode with how, basically Tyler comes back from vacation. She talks about how she got a, I want to call them Cylons, but they're not Cylons.
Isaac's people.
Isaac's people, yeah. Whatever they are, oh, I just want to call them Cylons.
But they're not.
Yeah.
I can't remember what they're called.
Kalons. See, very Kalons. Similar. So anyways,
yeah.
She picked up some, like, Kalon frequency, whatever, the signature from their ships over by this other planet. So they head over there, and it's like, this is supposed to be like a very. So this is what's confusing to me. When they arrive, like, everyone on the planet, everyone on the ship sees cities and 8 million people and yada, 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 yada. And it's supposed to be basically, it's supposed to be just, yeah, the scanners do. It shows them, though, on the scanners. But it's supposed to be like this desolate world, wasteland, like, desert. You know, there's nothing there. Like, but obviously, apparently it has an atmosphere that they can all breathe, and it has acceptable gravity levels.
Mm-hmm.
So an away team goes down, and they find that there's no cities, but there's trees. And then they come across a high school. And then they come across different scenarios that are related to how – somehow related to each one of the away team members, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like being on an airplane that almost crashes, getting beat up by a bully at school, and having, like, a monster show up. Their phasers, if you will, don't work. Their communications don't work. They eventually find what they think is causing it. They take it back.
You just muted.
And Tala's like, when are you guys going to come pick me up? I've been waiting here 2 hours. You know, like, just on and on and on. And then basically we find out that there's this race of people that are immortals. And
which we met in season 1 or season 2.
Yes. And since we met them, they've lived the equivalent of 50,000 years. And the long and the short of it, they're bored and they don't know what it feels like to die. So they put the crew in these scenarios where they all felt like they were going to die so they could live vicariously through them and experience what they were going to experience. But don't worry, you were never in any real danger.
Yeah, they basically mind melded with them in the moment that they were about to die so they could experience that. Just to feel it. Like, they're talking about how advanced they are. And she's like, you know, until you give up things of your identity, like captain, husband, man, until you learn to let go of all of these things and just accept that you are a cosmic being, you will never be able to evolve like we have. Well, if you're that advanced, why are you then hijacking people's brains to experience what death feels like?
And yeah, why do you give a shit about death? So, yeah, it was...
So yeah. It really lost me at that point. Like, up until that point, like you said, it was like a Twilight Zone or Are We Gonna Meet Q? If this was their version of Q, then shame on you, Seth MacFarlane. That was lame.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll find out, but...
Ugh. Yeah, it was a great episode until the very end there, and then she's just like, you wouldn't understand, you're not advanced enough. I just wanted to hack into your head and see what it felt like. I wanted to get my rocks off, you know, with you almost dying. Mwahaha.
Yep.
Yeah. Didn't like it.
Let's see here.
On the opposite end, Strange New Worlds.
Excellent episode.
Very excellent episode. I really liked that one a lot.
Yep. I enjoyed it thoroughly. We met some space pirates.
Mm.
We got, you know, the captain getting captured and like, like he didn't basically talk about like, I know I'm not going to die now, so I don't care. But mostly he was just like, hey, yeah, you're kicking my ass, but you guys eat like really shitty food and like, I can cook you something good. And like, you know, he's basically trying to pick the captain as he knows it against the crew and the crew against the captain to create a mutiny so they can escape, which is hilariously done, incidentally.
Mm, it was beautiful. And they even him and his number one had a code for it.
Yes.
Like so, it was a maneuver that they'd done before.
So we meet this new council, Starfleet counselor named Aspen. Now, am I the only one that midway through the episode when Aspen showed up in a lacy cat suit that, oh, she's evil.
No, you're not the only one.
Right? Oh, she's in a very sexy, lacy cat suit.
Here to tell them about this mysterious ship of innocent people that got disappeared somewhere.
Yeah. No. She's an evil person.
Yeah.
But it turns out that she is the captain of the pirate ship, you know, the Serene Squall. Her name is Angel. And she has captured Spock and wants her to release a prisoner. So that, or she's going to kill Spock.
And that prisoner, she says, is her husband.
Yes. And it's Spock's fiance, T'Pring, is who, you know, has the power to release this prisoner, apparently. Spock instead pretends, quote unquote, to break up with T'Pring because he's been having a lurid affair with Nurse Chapel. And they even kiss.
Uh-huh.
Passionately. To prove that they've been having the affair. And, but T'Pring's like, oh, okay, see you later. And so Angel gets pissed, but by then already the, you know, they've created the mutiny. They've got this, you know, the Serene Squall back.
Kind of, yeah.
That's hilarious. They're gonna take the ship back. And then Spock tells T'Pring, you know, oh, I was just playing around, it's platonic. And she's like, well, of course you were, it was logical, I could see that. And you used your human side to show the passion for kissing her, but I know that you don't feel that passion. You're right, I don't. Let's mate to, you know what I mean, like, let's have the sex to reaffirm our love for each other.
Mm-hmm.
But Spock thinks that Angel's husband is Cybok.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his half brother. So that's pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
Yep. So I'm pretty excited to bring him back. No, I love this episode. I love the campiness of it, the little comedy humor, especially like, you know, when Pike and his crew took over the pirate ship, but not really, not quite.
Yep. Yeah. He's like, oh, we may have called this a little too soon.
Yep.
Yeah, I loved that aspect of it. I loved the whole cat and mouse with Spock, the pirates, the nurse, and Angel. You know, we'll just call her Angel. I love the fact that she got away, you know, that she had a contingency plan. She's like, see ya. So we're going to see more of her later on. I love that there's a nemesis now. Mm-hmm. I didn't. Yeah, I don't know that I like the whole brewing thing with Nurse Chapel and the fact that, you know, T'Ping was like, oh, yeah, you never could have done that. And he's like, you're right. Yeah, let's have the sex. Okay.
That part like was a little
forced triangles like that.
Well, yeah, and that's what it is. It's like clearly like, and maybe it's because we know that Spock's not going to end up with T'Pring.
Yeah.
And we know Spock doesn't end up with Nurse Chapel because as far as you know, Spock doesn't end up with anybody right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they could always change that like they did in the movies when Spock was with Uhura.
Yep.
With, you know what I mean? So you never know what could happen. They could change. They could really wreck canon. Mm-hmm. I don't recall them ever delving into Spock's love life, if you will, in the original run or any of the movies or anything. So
I don't think so.
But anyways, I still loved the episode. I enjoyed the hell out of the show. I can't believe we're already 7 episodes in. I can't remember if there's 10 or 12 episodes. Oh, it's only 10 episodes in the season. So we only got 3 left. That's sad.
Mm. Yeah, I have been enjoying it quite a bit for what it is. So.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Yep.
Let's see, what else we got to chat about?
I think for combined shows, the only thing that we have left is Kenobi. I will say that we watched some more Doctor Who. We watched The Stolen Earth and Journey's End. That was rough. The Dr. Donna, the Time Lord human metacrisis.
Yeah, I enjoyed the hell out of that.
Always great, but always tragic, you know? And then last night we watched The Next Doctor. Yeah. You know, the Dickensian Christmas episode, the guy who, you know, I'm the Doctor. Here's my sonic screwdriver. Here's my TARDIS, and it's a balloon. And, you know, Cyberman. It, great fun. Great episode. The first one, you know, of the 5 specials. I'd forgotten about this one. So the 5 specials that mark the end of Tennant's run. So next up is the Planet of the Dead, and then the Waters of Mars, and then the End of Time Part 1 and 2. Got some roller coasters coming. I also wanted to make mention, this is going to be weird, but I did not send you a trailer for this, but I'm going to make a push temporarily for a show.
Okay.
That I have not watched. So I have the big old Samsung smart TV, and usually when I boot it up, it has like, you know, here's free movies and here's this. It'll have like just little boxes, you know, little icons that are like, you know, you might like this. And it had one for Apple TV Plus for a show called Shining Girls. And I saw Elizabeth Moss' face and I was like, oh, cool. And the description says, years after a brutal attack that left her in a constantly shifting reality, Kirby Mesrachi learns that a recent murder is linked to her assault. She teams with a veteran reporter to understand her ever-changing present and confront her past. I started watching the trailer for this. I got about halfway in, maybe, and stopped it because I was like, I'm fucking sold. Like, she was keeping a notebook of what her reality was, and she was writing down, I have a cat, and she was patting her cat. And then the next day she walked out and there was a dog instead. So she had to scratch off, I have a cat, and change it to a dog. So her reality keeps literally shifting.
Huh.
And there's somebody who's out there committing assaults and murders tied to her. And it just, it looks great. And it's on Apple TV Plus, which is usually pretty damn good.
Yeah.
But the whole first season is out there. So again, I didn't send you the trailer because I got halfway through and I was like, no, I'm sold on this. And I assumed you would be as well. So yeah, I'm just throwing that out there. Shining Girls. I'm going to try to watch at least the first episode this week.
Okay.
I think there's 6 episodes and they're 8 episodes and they're all there now. So yeah. But I think other than that, it's just Kenobi.
Okay, Obi-Wan Kenobi, this episode this week for you, thumbs up, thumbs down?
Thumbs up.
Oh, Okay, I thought you were gonna. I thought you, as well as fanboys of around the world, were gonna rip into old man Anakin pretending to be young man Anakin.
God. Okay. Who was it? Hold on. I gotta read you this. My buddy Andy sent me this. He said. He says, let me know when you're caught up on Kenobi. I was like, okay. He's like, remember in Avengers where they use that cool new technology to make you see a super realistically young Robert Downey Jr. talking to his dad? And I was like, yes. And he's like, and then in The Mandalorian, Boba Fett, they did a slightly less realistic but still acceptable rendering of young Luke. And I was like, I also recall that. He's like, did they fire that guy before this last episode of Kenobi? And yeah, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, that was the only bad part of this episode for me. And I was shocked. Like, I kept going back and like, why? Why do I like this? But it was a good episode. And that's coming from somebody who has been absolutely shitting on this whole series.
Oh my God. I can't believe this. So I had issues.
Yeah.
It's like we switched roles.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
All right. I had issues with – all right. So we see Kenobi and Anakin fighting when they're younger. And basically we keep seeing this because they're going to – it's going to relate to what's going on now, which is Anakin's drive to win and being so single-minded and as Vader is, if you will, Anakin, Vader, same person, you know, and not seeing the bigger picture. Because even though he feels like he's overpowering the other person, he's not really paying attention to what's happening in the long run, I guess. And we see that in their younger days as Kenobi, you know, schools his Padawan about it. Okay. So we're kind of seeing that mirrored now 13, 14 years later, whatever it is. We get a cool, you know, the Empire attacks the facility. We get that really cool, that whole bit of that happening, you know, you know, there's some great fighting going on. I enjoyed the hell out of it. But then Kenobi goes and turns himself into Third Sister. And then very easily he convinces her, after she spent 13 years doing the opposite, to let him go and turn on Vader. And yes, we find out that she was in the Jedi Temple with the youngling as a youngling, and that Anakin came and killed all the kids, and she was one of the victims, but she didn't die. She survived the attack. So she knows that Anakin Skywalker is Vader. So I get that. I understand that. But he very, very easily convinces her, and then he just runs off. And then she tells the two soldiers to take him back in to where he just was brought out of. So the two stormtroopers bring him back, and he very easily overpowers them. And then he just very easily goes back with everybody else, and they put a dummy ship out there so they can escape. And then we get Vader, who's distracted. He very awesomely pulls a fucking spaceship down as it's trying to take off by using the Force, and crashes it in the bay, and then rips it apart, and then the other one takes off. Like, how we didn't fucking see it. How none of us saw it, I guess. But anyhow, that was pretty awesome. But then, like, Third Sister goes to attack Vader from behind. And we all think that he's going to be distracted because that's the lesson that Obi-Wan taught him earlier, you know, 13 years ago that we've all seen. But of course, he's not. They have a fairly decent duel, and then he just runs her through like he did when she was a child. Like, and then the Grand Inquisitor that we thought she killed shows up, and he's still the Grand Inquisitor. And then they all have a laugh at her expense that we knew the whole time what was going on. Oh, and then, of course, like, Third Sister's still alive, but we think she's going to die, but probably she's not going to die. And she finds the message there from Bail Organa, basically saying he was going to Tatooine, but we know what he was saying, but she couldn't understand it. But apparently she must have figured that out enough. I don't fucking know. Because it's supposed to be important that she knows that Luke's there, but she doesn't know who Luke is, does she? Does she know that Luke and Leia are Anakin's children?
No.
Okay, then. So why does it matter that she knows Luke is there? Other than maybe she's going to think, oh, I can maybe use this kid like I used Leia to lure Kenobi out again.
So those are all valid points. And I absolutely did not think that this was a perfect episode. I thought it was a better episode than it was. So my first big issue was the droid. You know, he had a tracker or she had a tracker on her. And I was like, okay, I can accept that. You know, third sister fiddle around and put a tracker on her. That's fine. But now they're remote controlling the droid and making it go up there and like laser through wires. And, you know, the only person who can fit up into the ductwork is Leia. And of course, she's clever enough to be able to rewire this thing. So I had a lot of problem there. Yeah. Until she pulled the restraining bolt out of the droid. And then it was like, okay, that at least explains the remote control part.
Yes.
You know, the restraining bolt absolutely gives you full control over them, takes away their autonomy. Yep, I get it. It was a tiny restraining bolt that I'm willing to pass on that. Still, having Leia up there, you know, the little Mary Sue. Oh, I can get up there. Give me a ladder. I need a ladder. I'm going to go up there. Shut up. You're fucking 10. Knock it off. No 10-year-old has that kind of confidence.
Well, but here's the thing. They've established, well, they didn't establish it in the first three movies, episodes 4, 5, and 6, if you will, but they definitely established it with young Anakin, his abilities, his knowledge, what he can do. Mm-hmm. And so I guess it should be no surprise that Leia's the same way. She is her father's daughter. You know what I mean?
Okay. However, I'm going to push back on that because sure. Did you inherit any skills from your father genetically?
I know, but it's the Force, man. You know, the Force.
I like how, too, when she got up there to rewire it, there were no severed wires, even though we watched that little droid laser those fucking wires.
Yeah, I was curious about that. Because she just like, found it and plugged it in. Like, I kept waiting for her to have to, like,
splice some wires together.
Splice some wires together, yeah.
So, I felt like what you were talking about with third sister actually made total sense. It didn't like, because there was that moment at the door when Obi-Wan was like talking to her and he kind of reached out and he was like, you know who he is because you were there. We got the flashback and I didn't get the impression she was run through. I got the impression that she was taken in at that point and he made her, you know, they started training her at a young age. But he said to her, that one line that he said to her was, you're not serving him, you're hunting him. And she was like, I don't need you. So basically he was saying, you've been doing all this work just so that you could get close enough to him and kill him. And she admitted, she's like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. And I don't fucking need you. So, you know, she was doing this. She was trying to get Obi-Wan so that she could get close enough to Vader to, you know, kill him for revenge for her family, those younglings that she considered her family. So when you say that she let him go, it made a bit more sense to me because.
Okay. Maybe I missed that part then.
It was that one line that really cinched it when he said, you're not serving him, you're hunting him. And she admitted it, you know? So she was this whole time, it wasn't him tricking her. Like this was her plan from the beginning. And that's why the Inquisitors came in. That's why Vader said, did you think that I wouldn't see it all along? I remember that you were back there. I remember what happened. And I knew all along that this is what you were going to do. So, and then the other Inquisitors were like, ha ha, fuck you. We knew all along, which was kind of childish, but you know, I didn't like the whole convenient dropping of the holo message and then her picking it up. I was trying to remember though, Bail Organa did kind of let a little bit slip in there because he said something about like, does he know that, he couldn't have figured out that they're his children or something like that. It was almost like he was, a clever person could figure out that these children, like, this is not Bail Organa's child and that there were two of them. So maybe it's enough to put her on that path. I don't know. Yeah. It's still a stretch, and it was still a stupid fucking MacGuffin. You know, ooh, look, I happened to drop the disc that Obi-Wan gave me, and she happens to find it as she's laying there not dead after being run through with a lightsaber. Bullshit. Fuck you. Like Vader would not have let her live again. He would have cut her in half, like Obi-Wan did to Darth Maul, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, I found so much of that unbelievable. The pulling down of the starship was cool. It was also ridiculous because, yeah, that starship was in the air. We could all see emptiness behind it. But then suddenly there wasn't empty behind it because there was another one that was invisible while that one was up in the air. How'd that work?
Exactly.
How did that happen? They just wanted to do something cool, and they wanted to harken back to yet another video game, which was The Force Unleashed, where your character Starkiller pulls a Star Destroyer out of the sky with the Force. Like, pulls it right out of the sky, crashes it right into a planet. And that's considered canon as well, which is fun fact. But... yeah, they wanted to do something cool to once again show how badass Vader is, and good for them, but no, you can't just pull another ship out of thin air. That's ridiculous. So yeah, definitely not the best episode. It was the best of the five we've gotten so far, and I think part of that is due to the writer, because I was like, what is different now? And I noticed, I went back through and looked, and like the first two episodes were done by the same writer. The second two episodes were done by the same writer. And it's always like, if you look at the writers, it's always Joby Harold and somebody else. And starting with this episode, yeah, Andrew Stanton did it. And if you look him up, like in episode four, the worst one by my standards, Joby Harold and Hannah Friedman. So I looked up Andrew Stanton, and let's see some of his writing credits. Lightyear, Toy Story 4, Finding Dory, John Carter, Toy Story 3, WALL-E, Finding Nemo, Monsters, Inc. So this guy is a writer, and he's a, you know, Pixar writer. So he knows what he's doing in that respect. And I think that that's kind of why this felt a little better to me.
Still not. Yeah, but every episode is directed by Deborah Chow.
Yes. Like,
same director on all of them.
Yes, that is correct.
And it seems to be that the what's his name? I know who I want to say. You know who I want to say. Happy?
Oh, Jon Favreau.
Jon Favreau. Like, why didn't they just have him do all of these series?
I don't know. We do have, speaking of changing it up, we do have that new Star Wars movie coming from Taika Waititi, and he promised that it won't take place on Tatooine, and it'll have characters that we've never met before. And not like, oh, these are some androids, or these are some aliens. No, he said that it's going to focus on different characters. He wants to expand the universe instead of keeping it in the same place that everybody else is keeping it. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I could get behind that. I can get behind whatever he's doing. And I'm excited to see what he's going to put out for a Star Wars, you know, feature, if you will. And then we're also getting the Rogue Squadron still, aren't we?
Maybe. They had it, then they didn't have it, and I don't know if it's coming or not. I think that's it for shows, though.
Yeah, that's it for shows for me. Did you watch any movies?
I did not.
So I watched, I guess, technically four.
Okay.
Kate and I watched the documentary on HBO Max called Class Action Park. We had kind of started it last week, and we finished it up after you and I finished recording. Mm-hmm. I finished it up. It's a great documentary about this amusement park in New Jersey that is sort of I wouldn't call it a shithole, but boy, it is sketchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Good stuff, though. Addison and I continued our Scream journey and watched Scream 3, what I think is the worst of the five Scream movies, but still a good movie. Kanan and I were going to watch a film, and he wanted to watch, he saw Spree on Hulu, and he's like, oh, I have been wanting to watch that. Let's watch that. So I watched Spree. Still a great flick.
Yep.
If you were wondering, still a great flick. And then nice. I watched five. We had a family movie night on Sunday, family movie afternoon, Father's Day there, because it was raining and whatnot. So we stayed inside. Our plans got changed up a little bit. But we watched the 1960s Disney's Swiss Family Robinson.
You guys watch that pretty regularly, don't you?
Nope. No? I haven't watched it in that in forever. We watched, we've watched like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and several others, but no, we haven't watched this one. I don't think Wesley's never seen it. I haven't watched it in years. Yep. So, pardon me, but we enjoyed the hell out of it. It's a good movie. There's a lot of killing in it. Like, there's no blood by any means, but like when you're watching it, there's clearly a body count. as the pirates are basically getting home aloned by the Robinsons.
Yes.
So yeah. And then there's like, you know, the story where the brothers are trying to go all the way around the island and they see the pirates and then they rescue the cabin boy, who's a girl in disguise, and they treat her like shit when they think that it's a cabin boy and he's kind of a weakling and why can't he keep up? And, you know, he's kind of pretty. Like, even like there's a conversation about how effeminate he is and how we never thought we'd see girls again. And this is probably the closest we'll see. And it's like, whoa, calm down, Disney. and then they find out like that she's a girl. And now they treat her with revere and respect and they have manners and they're gentlemen and they're going to go slower for her. And like, holy cow, like, oh, you weak women. I'm so, you know, like, it was just like, oh, we didn't know. If we would have known, we wouldn't have pushed you so hard. And oh, here, let me help guide you down this hill that we made you walk down 10 minutes ago that you just ran back up on your own to get away from us. Anyhow, there's a warning before the movie. Which is rated G, by the way. But there's a warning before the movie that basically says, like, we now recognize today the inappropriate stereotypes and portrayals and depictions of some of the characters in the movie. However, for historical integrity, we're not changing anything, but just be advised. You know, it's kind of like at the beginning of a few of the original Sesame Street episodes, there's warnings that, you know, what we understand now, we didn't understand then, but we've left as it was for historical context. But like, there may be some inappropriate material in here for children, like calling people stupid and dumb and everything.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the last film I watched it on Sunday night, which was 24 years to the day from its original release. X-Files, the first X-Files movies, Fight to the Future. And I actually saw that in theaters on opening day when it came out in 98. So,
How does that hold up?
Ah, it's great. It's still great. I've seen the series more than I've seen the movie. And the movie was definitely way better than I remember it being. And I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's it for me for movies.
And as I said, I didn't really watch any movies this week. Trailers and news?
Yeah.
Let's see what we got here. Let's look back through. I don't think we had a lot. So I sent you the story about Lady Gaga could be Harley Quinn in the Joker movie, the Joker sequel.
Yeah, I saw that. I could see her being Harley Quinn, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Obviously a more mature, older Harley Quinn than we're used to seeing, I would assume. Because Lady Gaga is what? Maybe she's not as old as I think she is.
Okay. I wasn't even going there. I just can't fathom. The whole thing with the Joker movie was that it was so loosely tied to anything Batman, and they said that they were keeping it separate from Batman. You know, it was still Gotham, and you still had a Thomas Wayne, but they said, oh, this is not going to be Batman. We're not going to have Robert Pattinson's Batman crossover, and rah, rah, rah. And now they're like, oh, but we're going to have a Harley Quinn. Go fuck yourselves. The first movie sucked. The second movie is going to suck more. The end. Didn't you and I see that in theater?
No, no, we did not. No, 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 no. I did not go see that in the theaters. That was on HBO Max.
Did we see it together, though? I feel like we sat and watched it together.
Yes, we did watch it together, but we watched it on HBO Max.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was an HBO. I'm so glad we didn't go to the theaters and see that. But yes, we did watch it together on HBO Max. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, so that was my big complaint. Like, I don't care. They could have said, you know, Dame Judi Dench was going to be Harley Quinn, and my response would have been the same thing. I don't care. I don't want this second movie. Like, anyway. I sent you a trailer for Persuasion, another Jane Austen movie. What'd you think of that?
It looks good, actually.
Yeah. I think it'll be a lot of fun. Classic story. Dakota Johnson looks like she's going to do a smash up job.
Yep. Yeah, no, I thought it looked good. It was a little bit different than what I thought it was going to be. I enjoyed that, but it, again, it's something that looks real good.
Mm-hmm. I sent you that thing on Philip Baker Hall passing away. That was just because, like, he's one of those, oh, it's that guy. You see him in friggin' everything.
Yes, yes. He's been in so many movies or TV shows and, whoops, he's what you call a character actor, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think he was in, like, the Bourne movies as a kid. He had a role in the Bourne movies, I think.
Yeah, I think so. So he, I remember him, you know, Bruce Almighty. He was the station manager. You know, just he was always in something.
Yep.
Blonde, the Netflix movie with Ana de Armas as Marilyn Monroe / Norma Jean from the looks of it.
Yeah, what actually surprised me is that it's rated NC-17.
Yep. That's interesting.
Which is
least.
Typically, like, the only other movie off the top of my head that's not quote-unquote porn that's rated NC-17 is, you know, Showgirls. That was the first movie that I remember being exposed to as a teenager that was NC-17.
Mm-hmm.
And so things have changed. Some movies that maybe came out in the 80s that were rated R might get a PG-13 today. So, yep. Whew, I'm curious.
I am as well. I'm not sure. The thing that got me was I like the psychological aspect of it. You know, in the teaser, you see her like crying. She's sitting in a chair crying, saying, please, please don't leave me alone. Please don't leave me alone. And then the guy over her shoulder, as we pan over to the mirror, he's like, don't worry, she's on her way. And then you see the reflection just starts laughing and it's, oh, Norma Jean just became Marilyn. And I like that aspect of it. So I'm excited to see it. Like you, I don't know what the NC-17 is going to be about, but.
Well, NC-17, if you look at the rating, it's typically rated that for graphic sexual contact.
Okay.
Yeah. No one admitted under the age of 17.
17?
No one under 17. No one 17 and under admitted. Clearly adult children are not admitted. Whereas like in rated R movie requires anyone under 17 requires an accompanying parent or guardian that approves them to be there.
Hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah. So.
And then I sent you that story about the Iron Claw. Zac Efron's going to star in a film based on the Von Erich wrestling family.
So Zac Efron, when I look at him, doesn't look like he'd be a Von Erich to me, other than maybe Mike Von Erich. Definitely doesn't look like a Cary Von Erich, who they're saying he might be. Cary Von Erich is much larger. He was the biggest one. He was like, he was called like, he was the Texas Tornado. He was the yellow, David was the Yellow Rose of Texas. But yeah, the modern day warrior. I mean, he was like, he was the biggest cuttest Von Erich. David, Mike, and Kevin Von Erich, I could see Efron playing one of them based, you know, he's kind of got the same build as they do. But anyone playing Carrie's got to be much bigger.
Okay.
I'm very curious what they're going to do. I would watch this. I feel like they're definitely going to focus more on the tragic family life aspect of this. I mean, I can't think of his name, but like, you know, Fritz and his wife had 5 or 6 children, and they've all died under tragic circumstances, except Kevin, who's the only one still alive.
Okay.
You know, so it's it'll be interesting.
Yeah, this was another one where I don't really have a horse in this race. You know, I don't know who the Von Erichs are. I'm not a huge Zac Efron fan, but I saw it and I was like, oh, I bet you Mike's got some thoughts on that. So that's why I sent her over. Red Rover, Red Rover.
Yep. So yeah, that'll be interesting.
And then
the trailer for Tulsa King, the new Paramount Plus TV show.
Yeah.
With Sylvester Stallone playing a former mob boss who's in prison for 25 years, and he kind of gets out and he's got to adjust to life now. I'll at least watch the first episode. I mean, it's Sylvester Stallone. You know, playing an old man badass, which he, I mean, he doesn't look his age, that's for sure.
Right.
I mean, yeah, there's just, sometimes I look at people and I find out how old they are and I'm like, holy shit, I hope I don't look that bad in 10 years. You know what I mean? Like, maybe I will, maybe I won't, but.
You definitely seem to have a thing about the age.
Yeah, I do today, apparently. Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, I again, this was another one of those. I know you're a huge Stallone fan, and yep, it does look good, though. I will check it out because it looks like he was a mob boss. Now they're kind of sending him off somewhere else. They're like, hey, or maybe an enforcer. And they're like, hey, go take care of this. You know, you're old, but we're telling you to do this. So
it says here, Dwight the General Manfredi. Or Manfredi, is a New York mafia capo who just completed a 25-year prison sentence. Upon release, his boss sends him to Tulsa, Oklahoma to establish criminal operations there, not knowing anyone in the area. The general seeks a new crew to help establish his empire. Oh, shit. So he's not like, he's not, what's the word? Rehabilitated. He wants to be a crime boss still.
Yeah, but in Tulsa. Right.
In Tulsa, Oklahoma. All right, fair enough, I guess.
They just added a bunch of people to the second season of Chucky. Meg Tilly, Gina Gershon, Joe Padaleano.
Yep.
It's going to be interesting. I like the first season. I can't wait to see what they do with the second one.
Yeah, I did enjoy the first season way more than I thought I was going to. And I thought there was going to be too much teen drama horse shit in it, but there wasn't. I don't have any news or trailers to share.
Well, you sent me that news about Blumhouse Productions.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes. It was a comment that he made that Jason Blum made in an interview, where basically he said that he was looking to purchase Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And he wants to bring Robert Englund back to play Freddy Krueger one more time. And basically he said that he's confident he could get Robert Englund to come back and play Freddy in One More Nightmare on Elm Street, despite how outspoken Englund's been about not willing to reprise his iconic role again at the age of 75. Blum was quoted as saying, I could make him come back. I can get anyone back. I mean, Ellen Burst was 87. I got her back in The Exorcist, which reminded me that this October, a sequel to The Exorcist is coming out. So I know you had commented like, you know, oh, he sounds like he's being a dick. And I was like, well, maybe he's just trying to say that he's a nice persuasive talker. But, you know, I guess it does really come as maybe a little arrogant in there or whatever, but
it's at the end word of the day, make.
Yes, you it's know? The word make. If you would have said
convince, like make him come back.
Yeah. Maybe if you would have used it again, it's not always the message, it's the delivery.
Right. Yeah, if he had said like, oh, I bet you I could convince him, or you know, I bet you I could find a way to make it work with him coming back. You know, that's a different message than I could make him come back.
But what I'm excited about is the idea of Blumhouse buying the Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street film series and hopefully giving us new movies.
Yeah.
I mean, his first Halloween movie that he brought out, you know, that was excellent. Halloween Kills, not so much.
Yeah.
Some weak sauce there. We'll see what happens with Halloween Ends, but you know, I'd give him the benefit of the doubt because he has put out a lot of other stuff that I've really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep. Let's see. What else we got? I'm just looking down through our note that we shared back and forth. I did have a couple other things that I had set aside. So Marvel has announced that their next Disney Plus series is going to be Wonder Man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they're going to be working with the director of Shang-Chi, Destin Daniel Cretton.
Okay.
So immediately, everywhere you turn, people are like, are you finally going to bring Nathan Fillion in? Is he going to be Wonder Man? Is this where we're going to finally get him? So I'd love to see it.
I'd be there for anything Nathan Fillion involved.
Yep. Which is interesting because the original story, not the Nathan Fillion part, the original origin story of Wonder Man was that he was a villain created by Baron Zemo. And he was set to kill the Avengers. Like, you know, Zemo created him to stop the Avengers. And he was one of these, like, he had pretty much every power. Like, he could fly, but it was from a rocket belt that he had.
Yep.
But then later on, he discovered that, you know, no, he could fly without the rocket belt. You know, invulnerable, super strength, doesn't need to eat, sleep, breathe, rest. You know, he could do everything. He was one of those, like, Jesus Christ, he could teleport. He had energy manipulation, but he eventually got bested by the Avengers and joined the Avengers. So the reason that that's interesting is because another piece of news is that they're gearing up, the MCU is gearing up to bring the Thunderbolts together. Now, I was thinking that the next team was going to be the Young Avengers, but now it's looking like the Thunderbolts. And, you know, they're talking about how they've set this up. They've got, you know, Baron Zemo that they've introduced. They've got Yelena. They've got, they said Luke Cage, but I don't see that. But we've got Moon Knight. We've got Bucky Barnes. You know, these are all the shitty-ass misfit, you know, throwaway, almost like a Suicide Squad kind of thing, but not really. U.S. Agent. The anti-heroes, if you will. So if we're setting up the Thunderbolts, then is this where we're also going to get Wonder Man because we're going to give more of a spotlight to Zemo? Or are they going to do like they did with Kamala Khan and kind of change the entire origin story?
Hmm. Yeah, no, that's very interesting. I mean, it makes sense to what you're saying.
Apparently, Kevin Feige recently said that they will be announcing the grand scope of the next stage of the cinematic universe. Because, you know, as of right now, it's like, oh, we've got different shows and different movies, but they haven't really shown us a roadmap to tell us, like, where things are going. We know Kang is going to be the big villain, but what have we seen of him other than the very end of Loki?
Right.
Like, where is all of this going? Everything in Marvel always kind of comes together and meshes into one great coherent story. But right now, we don't really see them doing that. Yeah, so
we're not yeah. getting that.
Nope. So he promised that soon we will get some new info and we will get to see how it's all going to go together.
Yeah.
But that's all I got.
Okay, well. Well, in that case, that's all I have as well. I guess that's our show this week. I'm on Twitter. I'm Superstar Mel.
I have a Twitter account with username the Quantum Geek G33K.
I usually tweet about wrestling related stuff. So yeah,
I tweet once a week that this show is out and that's it.
Fair enough. So cool. All right. Well, catch us on our tweets, on our Twitters, if you want to talk to us.
And otherwise, we'll talk to you next week.